It's time now for our weekly appointment with Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist. And good afternoon, Elizabeth. What is on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Brad. Thanks for coming back.
My pleasure.
What is on my mind today are four different things that are all intertwined, which are my favorite shows. I love when I have a through line of thought that kind of carries me through the week and then it all coalesces into today's show. So one of the pieces is the moon effect. I was up last night at 3:30 in the morning with my husband. Thank you, honey, for putting up the spotting scope. It was amazing to see the blood moon, and rarely is it clear enough for that. It was a fabulous night, and it was a reminder to me because one of the, I think, highlights, I maybe think it's a highlight of my classes every quarter for a lot of the women is when I talk about the moon effect, because so few people, and especially young women, understand the connection between women and the moon and cycles. With that 28-day cycle of the moon, you know, from full to new moon again, and a women's cycles can sync up to 28 days, and the power of the moon so much that it controls the tides, and so that power, that energy that it has on human beings, but also very much so on women, because of that connection with the 28-day cycling, and that the salinity of the womb is connected and similar to the salinity of the ocean, Mother Earth, Mother Nature, Mother Wombs. And so I love talking about that. And that came up in class yesterday because of last night's full moon. And I love hearing from the students who go out and have their first experience being out under a full moon and really taking in the energy. And part of that, also that conversation, was talking about how women are socialized in so many ways to be quiet, to mute their voices, to sound more ladylike, to not speak out. And I was talking about how in many cases, when women are assaulted or are being attacked, or even people are coming up to them before anything happens, their inhibition in speaking out, saying, you know, get away, don't talk to me, or yelling or screaming or making some sort of noise, it, you know, prohibits women from, in many ways, getting away or having bystanders participate. And so I do this exercise at the beginning of class where I take roll, which I don't every day, but when I do take roll, I want them to give me a giant huzzah or a yeehaw or something that really comes from the depth of their belly, so they get used to having sounds that come out of their mouth that are explosive and loud, and to not pull them back. And then that connects to this fabulous blood moon that we had related to the beginning of Women's History Month, March 1st through March 31st. I love that my birthday is in the midst of Women's History Month. And it started in, well, actually, Women's History Month is tied to International Women's Day, which has been around for many, many years. But in Sonoma, California, they used to do a local celebration around local women celebrating women's International Women's Day. And that's March 8th. And then Jimmy Carter heard about this, and so we should make a National Women's Week beginning in 1980. And then it became a month in 1987, an opportunity to celebrate the accomplishments of women in the United States and the things that often go unsung, unnoticed, unrecognized, which is unfortunate. And I also don't want a month of women's history to be muted and silenced by the fourth thing on my, or maybe my fifth thing on my list today. So incredibly angry I am that yet another act of war is being waged to fuel, and I don't often get into my full feminist rant, but today is the day, my friends, because I am tired of fueling the patriarchal, masculine immaturity and lust for some sort of power and control, or to, you know, take the eyes off all of the corruption and things that are happening and putting lives in danger as if they're, it's not happening, as if it isn't thousands of people whose lives are ruined, or, you know, thousands of communities that are ruined. Just, I'm so, so angry. And all I keep thinking about is, would women vote for war? Would women step in and be as quick to say, let's bomb, you know, someone to hell. Let's go in and wipe out full communities. You know, it's not to say that it's even a gender thing, because there are men who are feeling as angry as I am today. And there are women who are saying, yeah, let's go in there. You know, I read in the New York Times, they talked to some conservative women and say, yeah, let's just bomb the heck out of them. And so it's not really even a gender thing. It's an energy thing. It's a feminine energy versus a masculine energy, the yin and the yang. There's that, you know, that balance of male and feminine energy. And we are so, so overly dosed with masculine energy as a culture, with the competitiveness and the having to wipe people out and, you know, singing the praises of might and fury. It's just, we're so overloaded. And I see it in my students who won't yell out huzzah with all their might in the middle of class, but boy, do they feel like they're going to go to battle into war in the corporate world as soon as they graduate with their degree. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to make my way. I'm an empowered person, empowered woman. I was like, yeah, you are. But if we completely reject everything about the feminine, that energy of caretaking and nurturing and supporting life, if we reject that, one, as a gender of women, and if we reject that as a culture, then we have burnt earth. We have scorched earth experiences. And it's not surprising then that you have a lot of women, a frightening amount of young people, primarily women, who are saying, I'm not going to have children. I'm not going to bring kids into the world because it's too dangerous and climate is collapsing and there's no future or hope. Like, that is not a good look. And when the government's fix is, we'll give you $1,000, like, that is so tone deaf and wrong and not even understanding or addressing what it is that needs to be in place for women and families to want to make children. That sense of safety. And again, the confusion is, well, we're bombing the dangerous people and that will make us more safe. And it's like, oh my God, stop telling me that for my 65 years on the planet. It's never turned out to be true. So there I am in my thoughts of those four things. And so the conversation for today for me revolves around, let's talk about some amazing women and the things that they have done. And I want to talk about women's efforts in peacekeeping. And I want to start with the grandmother effect, which isn't necessarily directly tied to war or women's efforts to advocate for peace, although there are grandmother councils all over the world that have done that, starting with the Iroquois Confederacy. They had a grandmother's council that was was informed, counseled before there were any acts of war that were taken up by the Iroquois Confederacy. I'm tripping over my words. The grandmothers had to say it was okay before anything was done. So the grandmother effect, the hypothesis around that, is an evolutionary idea. It's a theory that, why is it that human females, one, live longer than males by quite a bit, and two, why would they live long past menopause? If you think of us as biological creatures, really, when we stop procreating, there's really no great need for us, you know, in a pure biological form. But this idea is that post-reproductive females, grandmothers, actually are important because they help increase the genetic success of their offspring by being there to help daughters raise their children, thus boosting the grandchild survival rates and also improving their daughter's own fertility. Grandmothers provide assistance through foraging. I'm really good at going to the store, so I definitely do that. caregiving, knowledge transfer, which was the big thing, that grandmothers transfer cultural knowledge and offer emotional support and foster stronger familial bonds. And so evolutionarily, genetically, women are much more important to the species into our elder years than men. And again, this is not a gender thing. Love my men. But once you've, you know, once you're not able to bring home the wildebeest and build the house and, you know, help out in a positive way to the culture, you are kind of obsolete. But women continue to be of great value to societies because of that nurturing effect, that helping to foster care for the next generations. And so you can see why grandmother councils have been such an important part throughout history as a way of kind of containing the warlike nature of the masculine in civilization.
That's a lot.
Okay. I know I felt like a lot, but that's where I am today, celebrating Women's History Month, thinking about what the heck are we doing right now, and wanting to celebrate when we can the impact of women in society, because it is my hope that this next generation of women coming up see themselves as more than just an arm of the masculine, patriarchal war machine, and start to embrace that other piece of that feminine power responsible for the next generation's safety and well-being. So this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you are invited to be part of our conversation at 805-781-3875. You can also find me after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Find me on Facebook or Instagram. You can leave me a message there as well. And if you'd like, you can podcast our show by visiting wherever it is you get podcasts, NPR podcasts, Apple podcasts, Spotify. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, leave a review, hit subscribe, and you'll be able to upload the show to listen at your convenience. So we're going to take a quick break. Brad's got some info to share with you, and we'll be back to continue our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Every single day, I walk down the street, I hear people say, baby, so sweet. Ever since puberty, everybody stares at me. Boys, girls, I can't help it, baby. So be kind and don't lose your mind.
And I do have some information to share, as Elizabeth mentioned. We want to invite you to visit the KCBX studios for our Spring Pledge Drive kickoff celebration. It's happening on Wednesday, March 4th, from noon until 2:30. Come by to hand-deliver your pledge early, tour our facilities, and meet the staff. Plus, you can enjoy some special giveaways and food from Szechuan Kitchen in SLO. We're at 4100 Vachel Lane, and we do hope to see you there and get a big kickoff for our Spring Pledge Drive.
This diva needs her stage. Baby, let's have fun. You are the one I choose. Folks would kill to fill your shoes. You love the limelight too now. And don't waste my time crying, oh honey bear.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And we are talking about women during Women's History Month and some of the accomplishments of women in society. And I want to lean into my great displeasure in yet another headlines of war and destruction and bombing and wiping out of communities, because what's rarely ever focused on the front page of the newspaper or in the accounts of what's happening is the devastation to families and to women. I'm going to come back a little bit to that, but just for a number's sake, in the Bosnian conflict in 1993, 50,000 women were raped as part of the act of war. It was part of their way of bringing down what they consider their enemies. And then who is it after the wars move through, the destruction has taken place, who is there to pick up and restructure the families and to hold the families together and to move forward? It's women. And yet, when it comes to getting into the conflicts, that sounds so nice to say, a conflict. When we get into the wars, women are generally not part of the conversation about whether or not we should move into or have this conflict or send young people boots on the ground. Like, if anyone should have a vote or a say, it's the people that's making these humans that we're going to send in boots on the ground or flying in planes or being on carriers, whatever it is. Like, if I'm making the humans, then I get the vote whether or not my human is going to sacrifice or be sacrificed by my country. And there's been little tiny glimmers of respect for women's place in our social conversation about conflict. Back in the early 1900s, the Women's Committee of the Council of National Defense was formed during World War I from 1917 to 1919. And this group was driven and populated mostly by members of the National American Women's Suffrage Association, which was already in full swing since 1848, trying to pass the voting rights for women. And so the same group of women mobilized to engage other American women during World War I by helping with food conservation, working for child, welfare to make sure that children were cared for because women were going into the factories and working and, doing their part. They helped by giving out liberty loans. And this group was led by Anna Howard Shaw, someone that I had never heard of in my history books or in my history classes, but she actually played a significant role in increasing women's participation in public life. Because prior to this, one of the reasons it took so long for women to earn the right to vote was because it was illegal and considered, sordid for women to speak out loud in public, which goes back to what I said earlier about my students. Young women are gendered from a very young age to not yell or speak out or be heard. I can't tell you how many times I was told that I was too loud and too much throughout my lifetime. Like, it is a generational scourge on women's experiences that they aren't allowed to speak out. And until the early mid-1900s, women were not allowed to speak out in public. So here was Anna Howard Shaw. She was a suffragist. She was the first woman ordained as a Methodist minister in the United States. And while she was working as a minister, she also went to medical school, which was pretty unheard of at this time in 1886 for women to be going to medical school at all. But she did both. But she was much more interested in the political activism part. She was the president of the suffragist movement, the NAWSA, National Association of Women Suffragists Association, for 11 years. How could I have never learned her name? We know Elizabeth Cady Stanton, right? We know the primary names around the women's suffragist movement, but never Anna Howard Shaw. 11 years she spent working towards voting rights. She was also big in temperance, which maybe wasn't so popular.
Yeah,
she had a few other, and I will say, if you do your Google dive after you've heard her name, there are some controversies also about maybe some racist tendencies at the time. But again, she was a woman of her era, I will say that. But she also was a woman of her era that created a change in how women participated in the war efforts. Now, she wasn't at the table for any of the peace talks of World War I, but in the UK, there was a Women's Peace Council that was formed, and they actually campaigned for and helped negotiate the end of the World War II conflict, World War I, excuse me. So, there are little glimmers of that, and then they go away. And in World War II, just as a side note, the Women's Committee of Council of National Defense was not tapped in again to be part of negotiating or be part of the whole war experience. But we did somehow manage during World War II, when women were called in to work in the factories, we were able to create a national child care program that ran 24 hours a day so that women could work shift work in the factories and that their children would be cared for, that child welfare piece of, taking care of families during the time of war. And then after World War II, when the men all returned, somehow we weren't able to provide any sort of national child care system. It was impossible to have anything like that happening and have never been able to create it since, even though we continue to have vast shortages of quality childcare options for families who must have childcare for their families to keep a roof over their head or to have food in their house. I find that astonishing, not surprising, but astonishing. Along with, and I'm going a little side note, but along with, there has been proposed since the early 1900s to offer a mother's stipend for women who stay home and take care of their children, kind of doing service to their country. The way they formed this was, if we have military service and we, you know, pay for our military service, if we believe so wholeheartedly in the importance of our future and families and children, then we should be paying women to stay home while they're staying home for that period of time. Canada, France, Germany, Sweden all have some sort of, and they call it a parent stipend. It's not just for mothers. It can be either parent, any parent, but someone who takes time out to do the work of raising the children when they're young gets a stipend for their efforts. Bare minimum. We can't even pull that off. But again, we'll give a woman $1,000 to have a child, which doesn't even pay for the first OB appointment or a crib. Okay. So there's the little glimmers of activity back in World War I and World War II. But again, nothing big, nothing moving women forward into the conversation about how they can participate in deciding whether or not we go to war as a country. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you are invited to be part of our conversation today. Our number is 805-781-3875. I recognize that I'm on fire, and that's okay, because there is room for anyone to jump in and share their thoughts of a woman in history that they admire that we might have never heard of before. But let's push forward to a little more modern day, because again, sad, 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 the lack of women involvement. But there is a group that was formed around the time of the Bosnian conflict. It's called Women for Women International. And they look at, they've been on the ground work. But one of the things they looked at was how women were included in formal peace negotiations between 1990 and 2017, and then again between 2017 and 2024. And in formal peace negotiations between 1990 and 2017, women made up only 2% of those who were mediators in these peace negotiations, and only 8% of the negotiators. And then they checked again between 2017 and 2024. And at this point, there were 7% of the negotiators were women and 14% were mediators. It's been 25 years since the UN actually created a committee that supports women and peace. It's actually called Women, Peace, and Security Agenda. In 2000, UN established this. The idea behind this agenda is to advocate for women having equal participation in conflict resolution and peace building around the world. So it's been around for over 26 years, and that's as far as we've gotten, is 14% of the negotiators, mediators are women, 7% negotiators. We haven't made it very far. The other thing that's interesting in their research is that they found that when women are included in peace negotiations and in post-conflict peace agreements upholding them, it reduces the probability of conflict reoccurring by up to 37%. So if we wanted to have peace remaining to sustain, having women being a part of that increases. Because again, women have giant stakes in seeing peace agreements upheld. So as I mentioned, in 1993, during the Bosnian conflict, there were 50,000 women raped as a weapon of war, literally used as a weapon of war. And it's not the first time, if you read, you know, the Crusades, at any time there have been men marching through countries. That's one of the ways that they try to wipe out the country and use that as a weapon of war. What happens after the conflict, though, is that women primarily are left, one, struggling to care for their families, because that's what the role of women is, quite often is. And then they're also having to deal with the trauma of the rapes and what they how they move forward in any sort of way, ever feeling whole again. So, you know, men and women who fight in the conflicts have their own PTSD and war wounds. But then we have the victims of the people who are being bombed and attacked and then raped and brutalized to deal with the trauma. And after this these numbers of women who had been raped came out in the Bosnian War, there was actually a 23-year-old Iraqi-American woman, Zainab Salbi. We're looking at another woman in history for Women History Month, was so moved or horrified by this information, she went to work as a humanitarian and an author and created and founded the Women for Women International Organization. And this group started small, creating what they call sister-to-sister connections to help connect these Bosnian women who were isolated in different villages and dealing with the trauma. They started sharing letters of support that were sent back and forth to kind of give women the sense of connection and wholeness and the ability to move forward. And since then, the Women for Women International Organization has continued to be active around the world, all because a 23-year-old had heard enough and was ready for things to change. But then here we are again. Why are these decisions being made that most impact those who are responsible for caring for the families? And it's not that women haven't spoken out. As a matter of fact, the Women for Women International, they did some research looking at how many women actually became advocates and spoke out. And they were looking at different conflicts around the world, not in the United States, but in many countries where it's prohibitive for women to really speak out, have a say. 60 to 97% of women in these countries risk their lives to speak out against wars and conflict and try to bring along peace and try to change the course of their histories to protect their families, which goes back to the grandmother effect and women being counseled before any sort of act of violence happens. Because again, if we want to have any sort of future, it's going to require having people feel safe enough to make families and to feel like this is a place and a time where they can raise children and not fear for their lives and their safety. Our number is 805-781-3875. It's Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I'm inviting you as part of Women's History Month to share a great woman in history that you admire, maybe someone not well known or maybe someone fabulous. And Matt, are you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for calling in. What inspired you today?
Well, you were just bringing up great women in history, and one in particular who I don't really think gets enough credit, and they're partially taught about in school, is Helen Keller.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, she was an amazing voice, a true socialist. I invite – one really great book is called Lies My Teacher Told Me, and – there's a lot of other information out there about her, but it's actually done as a graphic novel, and it's really good for kids because it's kind of like the Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, where it's not the Disneyfied history that we are taught or perception managed in school. So big shout out to her and to go through all those challenges and to be such an amazing mind and amazing force. I give a shout out to Helen Keller.
Well, Matt, also, I think, and even for myself, we know her, you know, as overcoming her disabilities, but I don't know if we talk very much about what she did after that, you know, that the work that she did in society. Is there any in particular that stands out for you?
Well, that she was able to, you know, capture the world to understand things in that dark, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to be in that situation, but she was able to understand the plight of the downtrodden. And women are obviously a big part of that, but this male dominated, you know, this view of the survival of the fittest, well, it's everything's about cooperation. And there's no better example of that than women, I believe. And I really appreciate how she was able to realize this and be outraged, you know, speak out for equal rights for women, for minorities, for workers' rights. And this was during a pretty gnarly time in our history.
You're so right. And it is at a time that women, again, were not given an opportunity to really speak out. One of her biggest accomplishments was she was part of the founding of the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU. And so that's in itself is a giant legacy that, you know, you wouldn't imagine, because first being the first deafblind woman to earn a Bachelor of Arts degree would have been enough, right? That would have been a huge accomplishment. But then to go on to co-found different, you know, giant humanitarian organizations, the ACLU being one of them, is amazing. It's amazing. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yes. And all you parents, lies my teacher told me, get it for your kids.
Lies my teacher told me. I'm going to write it down.
Smart kids who know what time it is. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for calling. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875. Today we're talking about the importance of women in society and the impact giant actions by a masculine a masculine-dominated society has on women's ability to create homes and families and lives that are nurturing and sustaining for themselves, for the planet, and for our future. Love to hear your thoughts on women in history that we might not talk about often enough. 805-781-3875. We're going to take another quick break, chat with Brad for a little bit, and we'll come back to take your calls and continue our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. So tell me what you want.
You know, it's a pledge drive season here at KCBX, and it is time to renew your support. Your donation today will support KCBX for the months to come and help pay for programs like the one we're listening to today, who has been on for many, many years here serving the community, Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist. Your donations help us provide programs just like this. Donate online at kcbx.org, or you can call us during 800-549-8855. It's our spring pledge drive. We need your help.
Friendship never ends. If you want to be my lover, you have got to give. Taking is too easy, but that's the way it is. What you think about that? Now you know how I feel. Say you could handle my love.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I don't know if you noticed, Brad, but I picked some fun, poppy...
You sure did.
Women power songs today, because I didn't want to go too heavy and then people feel just weighted down. I mean, there's so much going on and we can't be effective if we just feel like we're underwater.
Truthfully, I was waiting for Helen Reddy, but I didn't see Helen Reddy.
No, because that's too expected, Brad. We can't do what's expected.
Clearly.
Even the title for this week, I left out Hear Me Roar. Just I Am Woman, Hear Me.
Nice.
That is the title for this week's show. I Am Woman, Hear Me. Because it's about speaking out and taking a stand and advocating for. I mean, because also I'm going into my 65th year, so I'm all about the grandmother's effect. I'm past, you know, my reproductive years, so biologically I'm kind of should be washed up. But no, little did we know that some of my most important work is probably going to go into the next part of my life, nurturing and supporting and being a voice for and standing up for the next generation. Which is why I really love the whole idea of grandmother's counsels and being able to kind of step in and do work that is important. And also as a group, you know, there's much more power in coming together and mobilizing than in trying to do things on our own. Although I will say, when you can do things on your own, that's pretty mighty as well. And I had mentioned the Iroquois Confederacy's Council of Grandmothers, or they call them the Council of Clan Mothers, inspired by that formation, the International Council of 13 was formed in 2004 to address environmental destruction, the atrocities of war, and to advocate for the next seven generations. This International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers was inspired by the Iroquois Confederacy, and then was also inspired other grandmother organizations to address environmental destruction and to speak out against the war, and to emphasize the importance of nurturing families and cultivating peace over conflict. And these groups still meet. You can find them online if you're looking for some inspiration of wanting to get involved. I think being a part of a Council of Wise Elders is a great place to start. I just know that feels that way for me. The other side note, Brad, and I don't know if you remember this from your history, but did you know that much of our Constitution, much of the early founding of our country, the model for our federalist structure was modeled after the Iroquois Confederacy?
I didn't know that.
Yes, no. Not many people do, because why would we want to admit to that? But yes, in 1988, actually, the U.S. Senate acknowledged that there was a direct correlation between the two, that the Confederation of the 13 colonies that we had at the time was influenced by the political system of the Six Nations, the Iroquois. They use as an example of how diverse sovereign nations could unite together peacefully and then create a stronger union, where you had states' power and rights, but then in the United States operating together. And again, we forget what our foundations were built on, and a lot of it is on a much more united and partnered-based society, because the Iroquois nations were very much a partnered society where women and men held similar, not similar roles, but similarly valued roles, that the work of men and women in the society was equally valued, because you don't exist unless you have the support of both men and women. And that's where we've gotten lost, that we've been so dominated by the masculine energy. And again, as I say, it's not men versus women. It's the energy of valuing what that masculine doing, destruction, building, creating. And again, there's a place for it. You don't have the structure of civilization foundation without that doing piece of the masculine. But what we've done is squash out the light of that feminine piece, that balance of nurturing, caretaking, sustaining, building community, building consensus, holding peace, you know, creating family structures. Like, those things are equally valued. Anyway, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. If you'd like to share a historical figure that you find fascinating. And I tasked both you, Brad, and Jackie, my intern, who no one's met yet, with coming up with a few inspirations yourself. So who's going to go first?
Well, Jackie, would you like to go first, do you think?
Sure. I'd love to go first.
You're up first.
Okay. So one woman that I don't think is talked about enough is Josephine Baker.
Okay.
She was a world-renowned performer and World War II spy.
Mm.
So she performed in New York City and participated in the Harlem Renaissance. And then she moved to Paris, where she became one of the most sought-after performers due to her distinct dancing style and costumes. And then...
Hold on.
Yeah.
Okay, one that makes me want to look at videos of Josephine Baker, so...
Yep. I know, me too.
That's why I love to pique interest for people. It's like, take your time, because now if it's about the videos, we must see the videos.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you. And...
During this time that she lived in France, mm-hmm. Adolf Hitler and the German army invaded France. And so she actually joined the fight against the Nazi regime by becoming a spy. Mm. So she transported confidential information by writing with invisible ink on music sheets. And then she moved back to the U.S. And throughout her career, she adopted 13 children from various countries and took her kids on the road to show that racial and cultural harmony could exist.
Oh, good one, Jackie.
Wow. Thanks.
A-plus choice. I like that.
Well, plus, you know, African-American performers had a much easier time in Europe than they did at home.
Absolutely.
In those days.
Absolutely. All right, Brad, how about you?
For me, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know about you, but I for many years had a subscription to Mother Jones.
Yes.
But, you know, what do you really know about Mother Jones? She's probably the most famous female labor activist of the 19th century. She was a self-proclaimed hellraiser and for the cause of economic justice. A U.S. attorney once labeled her the most dangerous woman in America. Sounds familiar?
Yeah.
She focused on the rising number of working poor during the industrialization of the country, especially as wages shrunk and hours increased and workers had no insurance or unemployment, health care or old age protections. And boy, doesn't that sound familiar in the age of AI and the jobs are going to be lost to that?
Well, just, yeah, it doesn't sound like, you know, it sounds like it's still a battle that is being won or fought.
Fought, yeah, and just now on a different playing field now. She first displayed her her speaking skills in Pittsburgh during the Great Railroad Strike of 1877, but she led hundreds of strikes, including those that led to the Haymarket Riot in Chicago
yes.
in 1896. She was convicted of conspiracy to commit murder. At one point, so she had a complicated history.
Which most of our heroes do.
Yeah.
They are people of their times.
She pointed out that women in Colorado had that had the vote had failed to use it to prevent the appalling conditions that led to labor violence in Colorado during the period as well.
Hmm.
So, you know, very important piece of history for women in
yes.
this country and the subject of a magazine that bears her name to this day.
You know, and here's a little side note of Mother Jones. When we were taking Kelly, my younger daughter, to look at colleges, we somehow ended up in Mount Olive, Illinois. And as we were driving through, because we were going from Chicago to Missouri, I think, and there was a sign on the side of the road. I love historical. My husband, not me. My husband loves any historical sign. And we rarely indulge him. But this time, it was a sign that says Burial Place of Mother Jones. And we also had a subscription to the magazine. So I said, oh, we must check it out. And so sure enough, we found her resting place. She chose to be buried there, to be rested alongside the miners that were killed in the 1898 Verdun riot, rather than with the wealthier union leaders in a different cemetery. And her gravesite is quite something. There's a giant monument there in her honor. So that's so funny that she would choose her, and that just happens to be someone whose burial site I have actually seen. And you would think that it would encourage me to pull over for every historical sign on the side of the highway.
But it doesn't.
But I don't. This is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're invited to share a woman of history of your choice at 805-781-3875. Or maybe you have an idea of putting together a grandmother's council or how the grandmother's effect can rise up. Because part of our challenge is who has the time and energy to be Mother Jones or, you know, to be Anna Howard Shaw, who has the ability to kind of put their life either on hold or move away from their life to speak out and to make a difference. And I think it lies, again, on the grandmothers. Part of the reason probably why we live much longer than our biological necessity is because we are supposed to be the mighty speakers, I think.
I sure would like to know where that generation is versus some of the women that are currently speaking in Congress, if you know what I mean.
But again, they are women of their time. That's why, you know, I have grace for a lot of women who have really adopted that patriarchal, masculine kind of power dynamic way of being, because post-second wave of feminism, when women were bursting into the onto college campuses and into corporations, you know, there were no doors that were opened for the feminine. There was no accommodations made by corporations to allow women to have flexible work schedules or to have childcare or to be able to job share. That just didn't exist. Basically, the doors were opened and the corporation society society said, sure, if you want to be part of our economic world, you can come work. We're going to pay you less, and we're not going to give you any accommodations for it, but join us. And just as necessity, you know, dictated, women put those power suits on with the shoulder pads in them of the 1980s and went into the corporate world. And now we've got multiple generations of women who've had to fight and battle to find their place in the corporate structure, to find what they hope is equality, but without in many ways realizing how they've had to step over or squash or stomp their own connection to the feminine, their own responsibility for uplifting those who need to be advocated for, who cannot advocate for themselves. Quite often it's the environment or single women with children or women who, you know, have lost a husband and need support, or even husbands need support. I am disappointed that we have such a strong masculine influenced women's culture, but I understand how we got there. I want to help and hopefully uplift this next generation to find that balance, which they're asking for. They're asking for in the way that they don't want to have children. They're asking for it in the way that they don't want to have to work 60 hours a week and still have time to have relationships. So things shift. So I'm not trying to totally condemn the women that are in power now, because Hillary Clinton's a great example. She's a woman of her times, and she's had to battle in the way she had to get to where she is. 805-781-3875 is our number to be part of the conversation. Hi, Linda. Carol?
Yes.
Hi, Carol, you're on the air.
Oh, good. I want just a program that preceded yours was a TED Talk, and the woman was talking about a book that she wrote, Three Mothers, the mothers of Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and James Baldwin. So I thought I'd... And then the other woman I want to mention is Mahalia Jackson.
Okay.
Because I'll tell you one reason why. Martin Luther King was delivering his speech on the Mall in Washington, D.C., and she looked out and saw that he was losing his audience, and so she poked him and said, tell him about your dream, Martin. Tell him about your dream. And it wasn't on the script, so that was a powerful thing of her to do.
That's very powerful, something I didn't know at all.
Well, I didn't know about the three mothers, so there you go.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Carol.
You're welcome.
Sounds like you've been an important mother yourself.
Well, I have the Los Osos bookstore, so I'm kind of up on these kind of things.
Yes, you are. Any other suggestions in light of Women's History Month?
No, I think those three mothers of those three prominent men and Mahalia Jackson, that's all I got.
I love it. Carol, thank you for taking the time to call today.
You're welcome. Thank you for taking it.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And again, our number is 805-781-3875. I'm looking forward to that book. And also the Lies You Were Told, the graphic novel about Helen Keller. That's two suggestions so far.
Great, great reading suggestions on our program today.
I do appreciate that. All right, Jackie, intern Jackie, I'm coming back to you now.
Yes.
Who else did you find?
So the other one I found was Queen Emma of Hawaii.
Oh.
She dedicated her life to improving the health, education, and welfare of Native Hawaiian people. And so in 1859, she established Queen's Hospital to save the rapidly declining Native Hawaiian population, providing free services to those suffering from foreign introduced illnesses like smallpox and influenza.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1867, she founded the St. Andrew's Schools for Girls, and her talents extended into music as a vocalist, pianist, and dancer.
Wow. Tell me why you were drawn to her.
I've always found like the story of Hawaii to be really interesting, and I don't think it's really talked about at all, at least here in the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
I found her, and she drew me in. I don't know.
I love that. And both of your examples of women you admire had performance in their life.
Yes. Yeah.
So there is a theme for you in that.
I guess so. Yeah.
Thank you, Jackie. Okay, Brad, back to you. Who did you also come up with?
Well, I came up
with... I love giving everyone homework, by the way.
I know. Hopefully, Jackie's going to get a good grade on this.
Okay.
I know I'm already going to bring the curb down. But I did want to talk about Carrie Chapman. And she was alive from 1859 through 1947 and was a leading figure in the women's suffrage movement. She was instrumental in securing the passage of the 19th Amendment, which granted American women the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And Carrie Chapman founded the League of Women Voters in 1920.
Okay.
And what that was designed to do was support the newly enfranchised women and promote government engagement. She was an advocate for international peace and women's rights, which is a theme that seems to run through our show today. She co-founded the International Alliance of Women, which focused on advancing gender equality worldwide.
So she's way ahead of her time with that then.
Right. And way ahead and sadly behind since we're still, in the middle of the struggle.
Well, you know, it's interesting with the timeline of the passage of the 19th Amendment in 1920 is that after, fighting for the right to vote since starting in 1848, one, it was the only bloodless revolution ever fought in the world. Not a drop of blood was poured to pass this amendment, which I always find incredibly powerful. But after all of that work, the number of women who voted was not high because although the amendment had passed, the rights of women in society had not improved, that women still were very much the property of husbands. And we had head of household laws where men got to determine, if women could go out and how they behaved and how they dressed. And, we hear about, someone like Anna Howard Shaw, who went to medical school in 1886 and think, oh, well, women were doing great things. It's like, yes, that was one woman, but hundreds of thousands of women and did not have those rights or that access or that ability. And so it wasn't until, so imagine the timeline here, Brad, is that you have the 1920s, women earn the right to vote, men are not having it, or they're telling their wives who to vote for. Then we have the crash of the markets, and then we go into the Great Depression, and we go into World War II. So women now are so busy, like everyone in the country, just trying to keep their head above water. The whole idea of getting women active and voting and, making a difference in society and in government isn't happening because it's just triage, trying to make sure we get through this. So as you can imagine then, we get through the Depression and World War II, and then we come into the 1950s where everything kind of stalls for a while because we go through a countrywide decade of just trying to catch our breath and then all the ugly things that kind of went along with that as well, which is a whole other show. But at the end of the 1950s, when things start to explode, because now you have women who fought in the war, who participated in the factories during World War II, and then were dismissed at the end of World War II and said, okay, thank you for your service, but you can go home and raise the kids in all of our little suburbs we're building, and the men will take over. So as you can imagine, women were bubbling about this, especially women who had an opportunity to work or get an education and wanted to feel like they were contributing and didn't want to be kind of shoved behind. And so you start to have women's consciousness raising circles starting up and women getting together and talking about that thing that they couldn't really identify. And coming into the early 1960s, where we start to have the movement for the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act for African Americans, women are on the forefront of pushing those through. They were doing a lot of the activism, just as women had been really involved in the abolitionist movement before the suffragist movement. They primarily were the drivers, a lot of the abolitionist movement, working hand in hand with Frederick Douglass, who then in turn was really involved with the suffragist movement as well. So now flash ahead to the late 1950s, early 1960s, and we see that cycle again where women come out to advance Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, and that's when you see women start to really engage in their right they're enfranchised, right, to vote and have a say and start running for office. And there's we have Shirley Chisholm, who, you know, made great strides for women, who rarely gets talked about at all as part of the feminist movement and, you know, part of history. She was the first Black woman to be elected to the United States Congress. And then she was the first Black candidate for a major party nomination for president of the United States in 1972, and the first woman to run for the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. So you see throughout history, women's kind of foundational and fundamental importance in all of these great movements. So we might get, you know, we might get really busy taking care of the world during times of war and plague and pandemic that we just went through and did in the 1900s. But then women rise up again. And that's what I see. That's my moment of hope coming out of the show, is that there are things come in waves. And we're in this fourth wave of feminism. And young women and young men are wanting to balance that feminine energy and to speak up for and advocate for those who can't speak up and advocate for themselves. That is my hope. That is my wish for Women's History Month 2026. And this has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can reach me after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram. Send me a message there. You can podcast our show by going wherever it is you get a podcast. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe. Leave a review so other people can find us. And you can also find our shows at kcbx.org. As always, I appreciate you being a part of our community and being a part of our spring pledge drive. It's very important for keeping shows like mine on the air, something that I feel honored to do and look forward to every Tuesday at 2. Thank you for tuning in and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
You keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but confess. You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin'. And now someone else is getting all your best.
And as Elizabeth was saying, our spring pledge drive is coming up. And we want to invite you to drop by KCBX Studios to help us kick things off on Wednesday. We're going to be welcoming guests Wednesday, March 4th, from noon until 2:30. Stop by and hand deliver your pledge and help get the spring pledge drive off to a strong start. You can tour the KCBX facilities, congratulate Frank Lanzone on his recent retirement, and enjoy food from Szechuan Kitchen in SLO. And we hope to see you there on Wednesday, March 4th at 4100 Bachel Lane for the KCBX Spring Pledge Drive Kickoff Celebration.
Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing, and you keep thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha! I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah. And what he knows you ain't had time to learn. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Are you ready, boots? Start walking.